once we have that conversation, the patient typically comes around to the realization that that test was for a kind of recreational purpose and the test they need is different.
If I were to ask you how to describe the picture of your life in the next 10 years, chances are likely you could paint a fairly clear picture. Well, today, with the advent of so many recreational genetic tests, as well as some more physician-prescribed whole genome tests, there is a continuous interaction with our genome and with our data. And for many of you listening, probably eyes glazing over, as I first did when I heard about and learned about these new advances in medicine. But really, the data that's being extracted from some of the better tests out there really ushers in a healthcare utopia. And in this way, it simplifies the decision-making process using data, not simply theory or practice or personal experience. It brings the physician and the doctor closer to each other in the form of reports and data. I, for instance, had my whole genome sequenced recently, and the results were amazing. And for example, if I was to have to take a particular drug, I learned that this particular drug to treat high blood pressure at this particular dose would actually not work. I would need something a little bit stronger. So in many ways, you and your doctor think that you're doing the right thing, but then you come back to look at the test results in a few more months and find, how come this isn't working? And it takes a lot of that, you know, practice out of and guessing game out of the exam room and puts it squarely into the hands of the doctor and the patient that he's sitting it across from. So I now introduce you, it's my pleasure to introduce you to Dr. Atwal, and I hope that you'll learn as much as I did in the upcoming moments that we have together. Our guest today at the Docpreneur Podcast is a special physician, and his name is Dr. Puldeep Atwal. I hope I've pronounced that correctly, and he is the physician in Jacksonville, Florida, but he's doing something really unique and cool that we're going to hear about just in a few minutes. But he owns and operates and is the primary physician at Atwal Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida. Dr. Atwal, I hope I pronounced your name correctly. I apologize if I butchered it.
No, that was actually perfect. I couldn't have said it better. Perfect pronunciation. Thank you.
Well, I want to just set the place setting here, set the table for our listeners, both physicians and those in healthcare executive world. And today we're going to give a broad overview about genetic testing and how it functions inside of a physician's practice. We want to talk about what's involved in the programming and the study of these geneticists. I had a concierge physician I was speaking with just the other day, and he was saying, you know, I just got back from a meeting where all of these geneticists were having to go and explain to the hospital directors, you know, what they do and justify their work. And, you know, there's a massive shortage right now for those listening of geneticists because so many people are getting their whole genome sequence. They're getting limited genetic testing. They're getting these ancestries. And, you know, physicians out there in our local communities don't really know what to do when a patient brings in this information. It's like bringing something off the internet, but we know it's got some medical value. So how do we talk about that today? So I want you to tell Dr. Atwal, first of all, we'll talk about why did you become a physician and what brought you to where you're at today and why genetics is important to you. So we'll kick it off there.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, just to, you know, your point you said about geneticists and where do they come from, how are they trained, I'd love to just explore that as well with you. But just to answer your question, you know, the reason I became a physician was really my love for genetics and my passion for genetics. I knew genetics was going to be integrated in all parts of medicine in the future, even when I was in high school. So when I entered medical school and did my training initially in internal medicine, the goal was always to enter a genetics training program at some point in the future. I hadn't quite figured it out, obviously, at that age, but eventually I found what I needed to find and entered the medical genetics fellowship at Stanford, and then sat the boards, and now I'm a practicing clinical geneticist.
So tell listeners and physicians out there a little bit about genetic testing and why it's important and, you know, what's available right now out there. And just like, because it's almost, I had a conversation with a hospital physician there the other day, and we were talking about this subject, and it was intriguing. And it was kind of like, well, you know, I use the geneticist like I do anybody who is a specialist. You know, it's like they specialize and can do a deep dive in that area. So, talk to us about your opinion on that.
And that's the I think that's the correct way of looking at it. If you think, let's say, a cardiologist specializes in the heart, you know, a rheumatologist and autoimmune rheumatic diseases. In genetics, we specialize in DNA. So our organ is the DNA, the chromosomes, and you know, obviously that affects every single body system. So when we see people, our patients in genetics, we look at many different organ systems and types of diseases: cardiac, cancer, you know, connective tissue, development, neurological, et cetera, metabolic, of course, as well. So in terms of genetic testing, you know, I deal with clinical genetic testing. That is, there's an unusual diagnostic finding or symptom that suggests a genetic etiology. It could be like, you know, family history or something unusual in a child, or some rare cancer in an adult, or some rare cardiac condition that suggests something that is genetic. And so we'll see that patient, evaluate that patient, select appropriate genetic testing, like any other test. Although, of course, there's caveats with genetic testing. And then use that information to help guide the patient's medical management. So there's other types of genetic testing that is out there, what I would call maybe recreational testing. These are things like direct-to-consumer tests that you can find out about your heritage or ancestry, other kind of low-risk, so-called low-risk, low-anxiety type information. And you know, that's great. You know, lots of people have got some very useful information out of those tests, but that's very different to what we do in medical genetics, and has very limited clinical value. Then there's, I suppose, the other type that is even more recent, so-called proactive genetic testing, where you know, you don't necessarily have condition that you're looking for, but you're trying to proactively do some screening to look for possible genetic factors that might influence your health down the line. So those are the three main categories, I would say: diagnostic clinical testing, direct-to-consumer testing, and proactive testing.
And I'm glad we touched on that, because I think that it's important for physicians and our listeners to know, and even we have patients who are readers of our publications, is to know that there are these three different types of tests, and they vary. The results and the reports that you get, as you will attest to in this conversation today, is why we're having this conversation, is that the reports and the information that is able to be managed and guide the physician and the patient into making better healthcare and treatment decisions, are very widely. And so with these recreational genetic tests, the ones that you can order online just without a physician prescription, you know, I went to Amazon just now because I noticed it actually changed from just 1 month ago. A month ago, it was 142 to 300 and some results. Now, today, I'm on Amazon and I typed in genetic test, and there's over 1,000 results that came back. And if I
If I Google genetic test, just on Google, over almost 8 million results show up. And so there is this large consumer, and I think that there's a misnomer that the consumer, the recreational tests out there are going to give this, you know, they're going to tell me if I have cancer, they're going to tell me if I do this, and, you know, really that there's nothing that could be further from the truth. And I've also noticed that with the second one that you mentioned, the, you know, kind of doing a small deep dive into certain pockets or certain areas of the human condition, the human DNA, is that, you know, we can look at hereditary things, we can look at, you know, certain cancer risk, we can look at high cholesterol, we can look at, you know, breast and ovarian cancer, but those are just little portions of the overall human condition, the human concerns. But then there's the whole genome sequencing tests that kind of give a big picture, which include the pharmacogenomics. And we talked with another group offline or in another podcast last fall about the importance of pharmacogenomics in that. So I appreciate your making the distinction between those three. So how does this kind of testing differ from, I'm sorry, we've already covered that. It was my second question. We're starting to see that physicians are seeing all kinds of, you know, promotion for genetic tests out there, as are these patients. What do you think that they need to know if their patients come in and ask about testing?
Yeah, that's a great question, Michael. So, you know, to your point, there's just more and more tests out there. There's you know, literally thousands of different tests available. And it's impossible for someone who's not in the specialty of genetics to keep up with what's out there, what's good, what's, you know, questionable, and perhaps what's not so good. Even for someone like myself who's had extensive, rigorous training in genetics, when I'm evaluating a test, it takes some time to look at it, and some of the information is not readily available. Like in all aspects of medicine, the guiding light for us, so to speak, is what's the evidence base behind this test? What's the what does the medical literature show that this test demonstrates clinical and medical utility, and how is it helping us assess the patient's genetic risk? Certainly, the answer isn't just clinical whole genome sequencing for every patient. Well, the answer isn't that today. In the future, perhaps that may be different. And our role as genetics professionals is really to help guide patients, physicians, and other healthcare professionals to kind of, you know, take the problem, the clinical question at hand, and explore it, make sure they're understanding the full aspects of them, and then help them select the correct test and arrange that test for them, then discuss the implications of that once the results are back. The test selection is actually a very challenging part and very, very thought and time intensive part of what we do. Multiple online platforms we use that help us curate the tests. There's websites and everything of individual labs, but there's also some more independent sites we can go to, and independent resources to help us. And obviously, we rely a lot on our colleagues as well, asking each other about different clinical scenarios.
And I think one of the reasons that so many people are looking at concierge medicine and patients in particular is because they know that they need that high touch. You know, I need somebody to help me. I need a navigation. I need a GPS. I need a guide. I need a physician who's going to play all of those roles with me. And as we kind of wander into the deep end of the pool here, and we start from the process of what is a genetic test to the decision making of which test to go, which tests are out there and why, and then to the patient and what the patient follow up and the coaching and the counseling that needs to occur afterwards. You know, one of the questions that rises is, you know, well, I got the, you know, and I got one of those genealogy type of tests, and can't that suffice for what you're talking about as my doctor? So if I had genetic testing done in the past, you know, why would I want to get whole genome done? Aren't they going to tell me the exact same thing? So I think that there's a little bit of the reporting side that we're going to get into the counseling too. But talk to us a little bit about how a physician needs to overcome that challenge with their patient when approaching this this complex subject.
Right, that's a very pertinent question, Michael. I get asked that question, you know, fairly frequently in my clinical practice. You know, I've had this direct-to-consumer test done. You know, do I need to do further, you know, in the patient's eyes, expensive testing? And when I've already had this, and can you use this this test in lieu of that? So for someone with my background, it's relatively straightforward to explain to the patient that, you know, what you had is this test, this is the methodology, this is what it's looking for, and I'm, you know, make some analogies that, you know, it's simply looking at small parts and not at what we call a clinical grade level of testing. And what we need is a test that one is clinical grade. It's validated by various organizations that oversee testing in the United States, laboratory testing. And it's appropriate for your needs. Once we have that conversation, the patient quickly comes around to the realization that, you know, that test was, you know, for a kind of recreational purpose, and, you know, the test they need is different. Also, I'll just mention that sometimes patients can go one step further, and they'll get access to their raw data from these tests, and they can put them into other websites or algorithms that potentially give them more information. And so they come and present with that data as well. Again, I stress to them the importance of the evidence base in the medical literature, and sometimes some of the questionable evidence behind some of the results that are being claimed. I think that comes very natural to people to understand that.
Yeah, I mean, in many cases, it's like having a mechanic look under your hood and say, you know, well, your alternator and your air conditioner, we need to look at fixing those. But, you know, you're coming back to me saying, well, because you looked at my alternator and the air conditioner, if my car is going to live a long and healthy life, you know, for the next 100,000 miles. No, I don't know that. I can't make that. But I want to talk to you before, as we make this decision and we wade into the after glow, so to speak, of getting these results back, is before we do that, there are those recreational ones, there are the, you know, self-diagnostic ones, and then there's the more comprehensive whole genome. But which ones and why do we, or to some of these tests out there, require a physician prescription for a particular test? Talk to us a little bit about that.
I'll tell you, that is a complex subject that you'll get multiple different opinions on if you ask. And it's actually a moving target as well. So in terms of direct-to-consumer testing, it's not, you know, you don't need a physician involved. Typically, anything over and above that, clinical grade testing, something that's CLIA, CAP certified, can be used for diagnostic purposes. Typically, that's when you need some sort of physician input. The other thing I'll just say with that is, I think sometimes patients have questions, good questions about genetics, whether it's some family history concern, whether it's some personal concern, and they've read something might be genetic. And rather than needing to, find a test, often they just need to meet with a genetic expert, that could be someone like me, a physician geneticist, or it could be a genetic counselor. I always like to remind people the first genetic test we can do is your family history. Simply taking a family history, going over your family pedigree, finding out, you know, what problems did your mother have, your father have, siblings, other family members, what ages were they, all of these things. That can be very, very revealing. And there'll always be a role for that. You know, I just like to remind people that's really where we should start, and most of the time. Now, obviously, if there's a clear concern someone has, then, you know, we can try and automate that as much as possible, given the lack of genetic specialists out there. But the role of just talking to someone should not be underestimated.
Well, and I appreciate you helping to explain that, because I know that is a bit of a moving target issue. But I think that for the physicians and patients and healthcare executives listening, the process of evaluating which test comes first, and then, you know, talking through the importance of why are we doing these tests and why are we doing this particular test with patients is important. And then, okay, we're going to send it off to a lab, and we're going to talk about privacy and patient safety and data concerns here in a moment. And then we're going to talk about the counseling side of it. So as we walk through this whole decision-making process, because this is such unfamiliar territory, even for physicians who have that high-touch relationship with their patients. From a story and article perspective for our readers and for physicians and patients listening, I underwent several genetic tests to kind of, you know, from an editorial review perspective. And I ordered one on Amazon. I ordered one on, you know, probably the two more popular DNA limited genetic recreational tests out there. And then I ordered a whole genome. And I'll tell you, by far and away, the whole genome was quite an experience and quite different. I mean, it was incredibly positive, incredibly insightful. And that's where we're going to get into the counseling here in just a second. So now that we've walked through this process and we understand, you know, okay, I know I need to get the test. I know what testing company as a physician I'm going to use. I've evaluated three or four of them, of these testing companies. You know, here's the one I'm going to recommend to my patients. How safe and talk about the privacy concerns behind the data once the test has been done. How do you alleviate the concerns from patients? And then we're going to get into the counseling side, which is fascinating, and it's so important and so eye-opening for me, just even from my whole genome. So talk to us about the privacy side.
And that's a very timely subject, and I think more and more we've seen concerns about data privacy, data breaches, all of these things. So and that's a question that comes up fairly regularly. How's my data protected? Who has access to this? So one of the things we do when we discuss testing with patients, we discuss this something called GINA, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, which basically states, I won't go through all the details, but basically, medical insurers cannot discriminate on the basis of genetic results. However, that doesn't cover life insurance, long-term care insurance, or disability insurance, or other insurances like that. More focuses on medical insurance, and so we discussed that. We discussed that the information, just like any other information, is protected under law, protected health information, HIPAA, etc. The chain of custody of that data is on a need to know basis. There's, you know, physician, there's ordering lab. There shouldn't be any reason that it's shared outside of that, unless they've given permission for anonymized data to be shared. And that's really the main things we discuss. Obviously, concerns about breaches and all of that, on the data. From a hospital or a physician office or a lab are genuine, but we just rely on everyone to to be vigilant about those things. But in terms of privacy, that's the main types of questions that come up, and that's the main types of things.
If you'd like to learn and read more, visit ConciergeMedicineToday.com or DirectPrimaryCare.com.
So what's next for you in 2018? Is it a what? Is it time? Is it happiness? There's nothing ordinary about being a doctor. If you want to be a great doctor, be available. Happy doctors don't just wake up one day. They rise up. Our culture doesn't make it easy to connect or love or like our local doctor. We've made it way too easy to be disconnected from those physicians and healthcare experts that can help us live a really great life. The good news is there's a group of doctors out there and across the country who aren't satisfied with the status quo. They're leaning in to their creativity and their entrepreneurial giftings, and they want to help. In January 2018, we're launching an entirely new set of podcasts and even a YouTube video channel for doctors, talking about important topics that we know that they've shared with us they want to know more about. It's relevant to your colleagues, it's relevant to your staff, and it'll be relevant to your patients. I don't know if you've heard, but nearly 80% of the physician guests at the recent 2017 Concierge Medicine Forum in Atlanta this past October were first-time physician guests of ours. Next year's 2018 Four Doctors Concierge Medicine Forum in Atlanta will be really about showcasing new ideas brought together in one place. Some of the brightest minds and industry-leading precision brands, health and technology futurists, and innovative concierge medicine and direct primary care physicians will share with more attendees than we have had ever before what the future of healthcare looks like. We want to talk about how personalized medicine can play a role in helping patients on their path to better health, but ensuring that doctors are informed, educated, and prepared to offer the best in healthcare is what this forum is all about in Atlanta. In the meantime, we want to give you a free gift. Download the latest podcast for free and share it with your patients, your colleagues. Play it 4,000 times on your phone or in your car and join the conversation at the4doctorsforum.com.